You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. It is December the 17th, 2020, and this is Fight the Empire. And now here's your host, Pear.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. On this nice, cheery winter day. Let's start about the Electoral College. If America had no Electoral College, Hillary Clinton would be finishing her first term as president. Back in 2016, she got almost 3 million more popular votes than Donald Trump, but he got the ones that counted in our weird political system. Going way back to 1876, Samuel Tilden would have been president instead of Rutherford B. Hayes. Tilden wanted to end Reconstruction, and he would have gotten his way without the crooked deal that allowed Hayes to take office. Either way, Reconstruction ended, and it was replaced by more than a century of racism and segregation. The Electoral College is based on each state's congressional delegation. Thus, it benefits the less populous states, and some think that's a good thing, but it means that a Wyoming voter has more clout than a California voter. The Electoral College also benefits white voters more than people of color. In other words, what it means is that our elections are rigged in order to get a certain outcome, and they are rigged in other ways, too. We can see that big money runs rampant, but the Supreme Court has decided that political spending is equivalent to political speech and can't be denied. And then we know the third parties are restricted in many, many ways, leaving us with this binary system in which the best we can get is a lesser evil. And so we have a system that lurches on until it either screws up big time or crashes entirely. President-elect Joe Biden promised the most diverse cabinet ever in terms of race, color, and gender. And so he named a black man, General Lloyd Austin III, for Secretary of Defense. Also in the running was a white woman, Michelle Flournoy. And this adds up to a lot of diversity. But General Austin is a member of Pine Island Acquisition Corporation, which invests in war contractors, and he sits on the board of Raytheon, the nation's third largest war contractor. and Michelle Flournoy was once an advisor to Presidents Clinton and Obama, and she supported the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya. So we get two kinds of diversity, but a single devotion to the empire. If anybody wants to call in with a comment or a question, the number is 503-231-8187. This is Fight the Empire. We are looking at the Electoral College and our political system and other issues that you might want to bring up. We know that the empire has been busy betraying Arabs and North Africans. The U.S. and the Saudi Arabian rulers, along with these Gulf mini monarchs, they have reached an agreement in which they would recognize Israel, leaving the Palestinians out in the cold. And the U.S. has recognized Morocco's rule over the people of Western Sahara, apparently in return for Morocco recognizing Israel's rule over Palestinian territory. So it looks like the Palestinians and the Saharans have few friends in the Arab world, except perhaps for the ordinary people who are ruled by these corrupt monarchs. We might ask, how long can it last? Maybe not so long. The Arab monarchs depend on extracting oil from the ground, and Israel needs oil in order to fuel its military machine, and oil is a dwindling resource. So one can foresee a world in which the oil is gone, and the structures of wealth come crashing down, and high-tech military machines are useless against an angry population. Well, the empire has another weapon in hand, the accusation of anti-Semitism. Strictly speaking, anti-Semitism is a hatred of Jews as a people, but nothing more than the fact that they are Jewish. And the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance has added some illustrative examples, seven of which touch on Israel. And one of them is, these are examples of how anti-Semitism has its effect in the political world. And one of the examples that they give is denying the Jews the right to self-determination. Well, this raises the question, should we allow for Palestinian self-determination? Does self-determination have limits for anyone? So these are some of the questions that we need to deal with when we talk about people are being accused of anti-Semitism. In the last year or so, British Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn was kind of driven out of office with accusations of anti-Semitism coming from Zionist organizations and also from the Tony Blair disciples within his own party. He was driven out of office, and now it is headed by a supporter of, if you remember, Tony Blair was the British Labour Party Prime Minister back in the when George Bush was president, and Blair and Bush concocted lots of lies to get the U.S. into invading Iraq. So this is what false accusations of anti-Semitism can do in the political arena. They can destroy a decent leader like Jeremy Corbyn, to drive him out of office, and put in I wouldn't say war-mongering, but a war-tolerant leader like Keir Starmer, who is now the leader of the British Labour Party. So this is something that people should be very concerned with, because anti-Semitism is really a cruel and vicious, I wouldn't even call it a philosophy, but it's being misused by political operators to equate being anti-Jewish with anti-Zionist, and they're two different things. There are plenty of Jewish people who are not Zionist. At one time, Zionism was not a big deal among the Jewish community in the United States. And then things happened in history that Zionism now is very powerful. They have a government out there in Israel. And for many politicians, it is very dangerous to criticize Israel because it is taken as equivalent of criticizing Jews as a people, which is just wrong. This shows how this false belief can really deform the whole political process. If anybody wants to call in with comments or questions, the number to call is 503-231-8187. It was very interesting. I was really listening to the previous show, Reggae Bob show, on the Negro Leagues, and I found it very interesting that people ask me how old I am, and I say, well, I'm old enough to remember the Brooklyn Dodgers. And I do remember when Jackie Robinson first came up to the major leagues. He was a guy who broke the color line in Major League Baseball. And I remember he was a really very exciting player to watch. He was a really fast runner. And he would, if he got on base, either, you know, he got a hit or got walked, he would take these long, long dancing leads off of first base, threatening to steal second base. And he really kind of drove the pitchers wild. He'd take these long leads, and the pitcher didn't know whether to try and pick him off or whether he was going to make a break for second base. And so, and then if he did steal second base, then the pitchers would really go crazy because now Jackie Robinson is taking these long leads behind him. So the pitcher can't just watch over his shoulder. He has to practically turn around to keep his eye on Jackie Robinson. So he was a really exciting ball player to watch. And it was certainly a great time for the Brooklyn Dodgers because he came up and along came some other great ball players from the Negro Leagues. I remember Roy Campanella was the catcher. And the Dodgers had an excellent pitcher, Don Newcomb, who was really a big guy. He was a great pitcher. He was also a good hitter. Pitchers are generally not, you know, they're not in the major leagues because of their batting ability, and so they are generally not very good at the plate. But Don Newcomb was. He was so good that there were quite a few times where he would be brought in as a pinch hitter because he was that good as a batsman. So Don Newcomb was a really exciting guy to watch. He hit a lot of home runs. And Major League Baseball really lost out for years. You had some great all-stars playing in the Negro Leagues who never did make it. There were players before Jackie Robinson who finished out their careers in the Negro Leagues. One of the players in particular who is considered by many to be one of the greatest ball players of all time was named Josh Gibson, and he spent his entire career in the Negro Leagues. So this was something that was long overdue in Major League Baseball. It finally happened, and Major League Baseball is better for it. If people want to call in, do you have memories of Major League Baseball that you like to share? Number to call is 503-231-8187. One thing I'd like to talk about some more is this this definition of anti-Semitism. There's a group called the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, and their definition of anti-Semitism is this. This is a quote. "Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed towards Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, toward Jewish community institutions and religious facilities." And so that is their definition. And so then they give seven examples to illustrate how anti-Semitism actually manifests itself in the political and public arena. Seven of them relate to Israel. "Criticism of Israel, similar to that leveled against any other country, cannot be regarded as anti-Semitic." So the question here is, if you charge Jewish nations like Israel with doing bad things, you have to see, is it only Israel that is singled out, or is it a question of Israel doing things that other nations do and being criticized for that? In other words, there are no special standards for one country that you would not apply to others. And one of these is one of the examples that the Holocaust Remembrance Alliance picks out is denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination. For example, by claiming that the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavor. So this is sort of the crux of the whole controversy, is that is Israel being singled out just because it is Jewish, or is it being criticized for doing things that other nations do also? And I would say that this is what we should be doing. In other words, the things that Israel is doing to the Palestinians are kind of, to my mind at least, they're very similar to what any conquering nation does to the people it conquers. This is, sadly, this is kind of, you see this throughout history, where nations conquer other nations, and the conquered people are treated as second-class citizens. A prime example would be America's treatment of Native Americans, where they are, we conquered a whole continent, Europeans did, and Native Americans were, you could call it a kind of a genocide. They were practically eliminated entirely, but not quite. They were placed on reservations, given inferior treatment in many, many ways. And so this is what conquering nations do to other the people that they rule over. So in this sense, if we criticize Israel for doing things like that, we should take note that other nations do the same kind of thing. And Israel is not being singled out because it is Jewish. It is being criticized because, like many other conquering nations, it is treating its the defeated people very, very badly. And you could even, some might argue that compared to other conquering nations, that Israel treats its Arab citizens, Palestinians, better than many other people are being treated. And I think this is a fair statement to make. You can think of some examples of conquerors through history where the conquered people were really badly treated and put in prisons and concentration camps and much worse. So this is why it is so hard to talk about anti-Semitism without and still being fair-minded. In other words, without singling out one nation or one people as being sort of more worthy of criticism than anyone else. And so we see this kind of like a running thread throughout history. Some of the other examples that the Holocaust Remembrance Alliance gives as examples of anti-Semitism in public life are accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoing committed by a single Jewish person or group. So in other words, if a Jewish group commits some crime against Palestinians, all right, you can criticize, you can blame that particular group or the people involved, but it is absolutely wrong to criticize Jews as a people for crimes committed by just a few. In fact, many Jewish people are not Zionists, and some are pretty strongly anti-Zionists. I remember one guest I had on my show a couple of times some years ago was a historian named Lenny Brenner, who wrote several books about Zionism. One was Zionism in the Age of the Dictators, and he was very clear-minded in his opposition to Zionism, and he was because he realized that Zionism is a kind of it's a political philosophy, it is a nationalistic philosophy, and that elevates one group over others, and it should be seen in that sense. It is not some kind of it is not a thing that you can blame a whole people for. So
here, I hate to interrupt you. I just wanted to let you know that you had a caller, LJ, on the line.
Okay, LJ is on the line. Good morning, LJ.
Hey, Pierre, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Haven't heard from you for quite a while. How you been?
Well, life has changed. My spouse of 62 years died.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, she had heart failure, and we did hospice at home. And so she died at home, which was a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And yada 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 yada. All right, so just a couple of quick things, all right? When you mentioned the Negro League, you didn't mention the greatest pitcher that ever lived, Satchel Paige.
All right. Oh yes, yes. Tell us about him.
He was an incredible pitcher. I mean, I never saw him because I was really young, but I understand he can put a ball by you. And and you wouldn't even see it coming.
Wow.
He was an incredible pitcher.
As a matter of fact,
Woody Allen named his son Satchel after Satchel Paige.
Oh, really? Well, you know, one thing about Satchel Paige is that most of his career was in the Negro Leagues, and
right.
then he came up to the major leagues, and he
yeah.
was, no one knew exactly how old he was. He was kind of, he sort of played little games about revealing his age, but say that he was pitching in the major leagues when he was into his 40s.
Right.
And he had that fastball, he had that control. I mean, he was an amazing player.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable player. All right, so just a couple of real quick points.
Mm-hmm.
All right. As you may or may not know, when Jimmy Carter was president, the White House was solar.
That's right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when Ronnie took over, the first thing he did was take down the solar panels, saying it's going to give the wrong impression.
So, wow. Uh-huh.
So if Biden is truly interested in climate change and the environment, let's see if we can get him to reinstall the solar panels on the White House. The people's house.
That would be making a good statement.
Yes, don't you think?
I certainly do. If I had the money, I'd put solar panels on my house too. But
yeah, well, sure, it just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And thank you for bringing up the Israel-Palestine situation. As you know, the person who started Zionism was Theodore Herzl.
Right. Yes.
Right. And when Israel was formed, there was a guy named Balfour who decided that we should have a state of Israel, and he had no authority to do so.
Well, Balfour was a British Foreign Secretary, I believe.
Right. Right.
And he was He was giving away Palestine, which was not his property to give away.
No, it wasn't his to give away to begin with, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
And just one more quick point. Anytime the white man colonizes a country, the residents, the indigenous people, always suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I got to say, Pierre.
Well, it's really, you know, it's really good to hear from you again.
Well, good to hear you, Pierre.
Well, hey, stay in touch, and
I will. Now I can. I was otherwise occupied.
Well, that's really sad. It's sad news, but
No, Pierre. Listen, she was suffering for quite a while.
Uh huh.
This is the best thing that could ever happen. So.
Uh huh.
All right, then. Take care.
Okay, you too. Well, we're getting near the end of our show, and
Pierre, we have one more caller, Roger, that would like to make some comments.
Okay, we have one more caller on the line. Good morning.
Oh,
hello.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Hi, Pierre.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you had any comments about the recent allegations that Russia's been hacking into various agencies and stuff like that, and as reported by David Sanger, which raises a red flag for me. I'll let you comment. I'll listen on the air.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, Russian hacking. I suppose my first comment would be that it doesn't surprise me, because this is what every nation has its sort of espionage people, especially big powers like Russia and the United States and the European powers. And so this is what This is what intelligence agencies do. They hack other governments. So the fact that Russia could be hacking the United States, it does not come as a big surprise. I would also say that I've been looking into the how much hacking the U.S. does, and it's pretty considerable. So this is what this is kind of what nations do to each other. So exactly what the hacking involves, I am not sure. I mean, it's along with the hacking goes accusations. You know, if all nations are hacking, and they're also accusing other nations of hacking and playing down their own malfeasance. So this is something we should look into kind of with open eyes and realize that it's kind of endemic to political espionage. And I think that don't really have time to do it right now, but the so-called hacking of the Democratic National Committee was greatly exaggerated. A fellow named worked for the NSA showed that the Democratic National Committee material was downloaded and passed on to WikiLeaks. It was not hacked, and so that whole Democratic National Committee hacking was greatly exaggerated. So this is something that people should look into. I think we're at the end of our time right now. This has been